Hello, this is the Outlook podcast with me, Emily Webb. Kibera in Kenya is believed to be Africa's biggest slum, with around 250,000 inhabitants.
So if you walk into Kibera, first of all, you come to our area, you will pass through a railway track. It's a symbol. That railway track kind of divide the rich and the poor. So the other side is much more cleaner. You're coming inside Kibera now, there is a little bit of smell. You'll see garbage. As you walk around, you'll see children who are just playing with mud. Some are playing in the sewage, running around. Some don't have shoes. And then you also see something amazing. You see entrepreneurship of these women who are selling vegetables and tomatoes by the road. You will also see poverty, but you will see the spirit of togetherness. People who are not giving up, resilience in these people. They are surviving.
Kennedy Odede is sometimes called the unofficial mayor of Kibera, though he says he doesn't have political aspirations. How do you feel about it as a place?
It's a place of energy. Right now, truth be told, I don't live inside Kibera, but I live a little bit out of Kibera. And where I live now, it's boring. Kibera was really lively. We were one. Despite the challenges, I see we value life.
Kennedy has been on the Forbes 30 under 30 list, rubbed shoulders with Beyoncé. He can speak six languages and he's a scholarship recipient. A mind-boggling level of achievement when you hear what he's endured. In fact, he used to be a self-described tough guy.
You ought to know this, I was a very, very tough guy.
He's seen some awful things, but listening to him speak, you might be surprised at how much he laughs when talking about tragedy.
Yes.
He moved to Kibera as a child. His mother was looking for work and a better life, but things didn't work out and they ended up destitute and struggling. Though Kennedy does remember his mother's encouragement.
So he couldn't afford food, but when you don't have food, your lips are dry. And then my mother would be like, Kennedy, come in here. Ken, he put oil on our lips so we look like we have eaten, although we are hungry, because we don't want to shame. You know what I mean? We don't want to beg. And I also remember living in a 10 by 10 with our siblings. 10 by 10 is a really small room. There was no toilet. And I remember, and women, so in Kibera, it's now changing, but if you beat a woman, it was normal. They were like children. Ah, they are beaten. I remember my mom coming with a trick that any man who going to beat a woman here, all of us in this plot where we live, in this neighborhood, all women are going to start screaming. And when we start screaming, men will come to stop it because they want to sleep. Guess what? It happened. So anytime a woman was beaten at night by their husband, the whole neighborhood was making noise. And then other men would be like, please stop beating your wife because I want to sleep. You know what I mean? So I think I learned activism. I learned caring about issues from that early age.
Would you be going to school?
No, because by then it was really, really expensive.
You did teach yourself to read, even though you didn't go to school.
Yes, so I used to collect old newspapers.
So there'd be newspapers in the rubbish, sort of on the street, yeah.
Yes, yes. And I'm a very keen person. So I used to collect this thing and teach myself. When you read, the reading takes you to another world and you forget the poverty again and you forget the pain.
Kennedy wasn't attending school and lived in these cramped conditions with little food. Even with his mother's positivity, it was tough. So at 10 years old, Kennedy decided to run away.
My mother had me when she was around 15 years old. So I really felt unwanted. I really felt all these things in my life. So going away, I also felt like I was searching and also looking for my freedom on the street.
Where did you go?
There's a friend of mine who was on the street too, who his name is Kamau. He used to bring food sometimes to his siblings, and I kind of liked his life. And he was not going to school. He was a kid, but he behaved like a man, like an adult.
So when you did run away and you were living with this friend, you were on the streets in Nairobi. As a 10-year-old, what was life like?
You sleep on the garbage. You are the one being sent out to steal things. Sometimes you go to the market, you're going to steal.
So would this be other people on the streets who'd be telling you to do these things?
Yes. We were like a group.
Would you call it a gang?
Kind of a gang, yes. Yeah, street gang. Yeah. But I didn't have gun. It was a knife.
And you used to sniff glue as well, didn't you?
Yes. It looks like just sniffing glue, but it was a little bit of running away from the pain because I could not sleep without it at night. For me, my daily life was that I was hopeless and I knew I could die anytime and I was not scared of death. Then I also had some of my friends who were already in prison. I thought either I die and the another one is to go to prison. Prison was good because you're going to get free food. They're going to take care of you. You're going to have a roof over you. You're going to meet your friends. What I hated most is to be hurt.
Because you had this fear that if you were hurt, that nobody really cared.
Nobody cared. And then that would be the big suffering. And then most of the time, street kids were killed. You know, mob justice. What's sad about them is that when they die, there's no burial. There's no ceremony. They go like that.
There is one incident that still haunts Kennedy. He and another young boy were trying to find a way to get money, and this does involve the death of a child.
Me and my friend, we went. We used the human waste on the road to ask for money because nobody was giving us money or food. So you walk, we're like, you're going to put money there or we throw this human waste on you. So we made a lot of money by then, a lot of money.
So there was what sort of excrement by the side of the road and you throw it at people if they didn't give you money?
Yeah, they don't give us money, you know. And we got money. Then I'm like, you know what? Now we should chill. But my friend was not satisfied. Like, tomorrow, let's do it again. And I refuse. Then he left me in the morning. He said, he's going to look for money again. So guess what he did? So he went and he stole a woman's bag.
Okay? A handbag.
Yeah, handbag. And he ran. By the time he ran, a car stopped by. So the people went to him. So I was walking, I see people beating this kid. He's a thief, he's a thief. I'm around there and I look, I'm like, they're going to kill Kamau. And I felt like Judas in some ways because some people say, another street boy is here, they must be together. And I say, no, I don't know him. You know what I mean? It was a friend and they killed him. And the police van came and they took the body. And I saw the car disappearing. And up to now, that memory has not left. And it was the most saddest part. That's the guy who brought me on the street, who really taught me a lot to survive.
When you were witnessing things like that and you were surrounded by such horrific events, how did you feel at the time about your future?
I'll be honest with you. I knew my future will end like that. Let's be honest. There's no way I will make it.
Because you were at one stage, you were almost killed yourself.
Yes. Which one? There's many times happened. There's one when I stole the mango.
So tell me about that, what happened?
I don't steal anymore. But that was, I was very angry and we went to the market and I was caught. But I was really beaten. A Samaritan who stopped the people who were beating me to ask questions. What did he stole and how many? You know, I will pay for it.
So you had stolen this mango and then people were beating you up and a man stepped in and he said, I'm going to pay for whatever you've stolen. You told me about how you felt that people didn't care about you. What was that like for you?
The life I've went through has also taught me something. Although people can be horrible, can be bad, but they are good people. Mm. People can do things that you can't believe. This thing can be done by a human being. But at the same time, human being can also do amazing things that give you hope and believe in humanity.
There was a priest who you came across and he ended up giving you a book which had a huge influence on you. Well, how did that happen and what was the book?
So I got this book of Martin Luther King Jr. I really, honestly, so my dream became more like I wanted to be Dr. King of Kibera. To be honest with you, I was being crazy. Not of the world of Kenya, but just small for my community.
So obviously, Dr. Martin Luther King's this huge American civil rights activist. What do you think it was about his story and the way that he did things?
Oh, that's amazing. So I love your selflessness. And then, oh my God, I love the story. This is crazy. I'm so excited. I have to speak slowly now. My wife said that when I get excited, I speak very fast. So I'll be careful. So the story I love is that reading his story brought me back to the segregation. And I'm like, wow, I got it. Kibera is segregated. Mm-hmm. We can go to these nice hotels. You can go to the city. If police shoot our people, no investigation. So I'm like, Dr. King and I, we connect. So I love that. And I love the story that he started from a church.
See, so there's parallels between the way that the US was segregated between the white and the black community and the way that
yes.
Kibera was segregated from the rest of Nairobi, maybe between, you know, poorer and rich people.
Yes.
Inspired by Martin Luther King, Kennedy wanted to make change somehow, but he was about to face one last tragedy.
So this is sad. So while I was already knowing about Dr. King, and I was looking for my troopers. So this young man has been looking for me a lot, but I didn't have time because of what I call hustling. Waking up early in the morning at 4, you have to walk to the industrial area. You come back, you are tired, you just fall asleep. We call it hand to mouth.
So you were working in a factory, and what was it, like $1 a day you were earning for 10 hours?
I was earning $1 a day, yes. So Calvin has been looking for me. So one day I come from work and I go and I phone him, hanged himself. And that was so, so tough.
Finding that his friend could see no other option other than hanging himself, Kennedy felt a new sense of urgency. He wanted to do something, anything, to try to stop this desperation. You went through that, and then not long afterwards, you were on your way home, as you say, you earned so little, and you saw a boy selling a football.
Yes, and I bought it for like 20 cents.
And why did you spend your money on that? What was so important about that football?
When I saw this ball, I saw this is the entry. I'm being honest with you. I remember I saw it and I thought of Dr. King, who was in Alabama church, and that time was a small church, and they met there. This ball, when I attract people together, we're going to be coming and talking about our issue and playing this ball. Mm. And I knew that for me, that's the entry point. So when that ball, I saw it and I knew this is it. Because we love soccer, football so much. So I knew that was going to be my entry point.
So your idea was that you were going to bring people together. You were going to give people hope through football. You went to your friend George and you said, I want to transform Kibera. What was his reaction?
George didn't believe me. George, you know, was the leader of this gang. And George and I started when George used to write my love letters. You know, I'm a very shy guy, you know, and when I see a beautiful person and I don't know how to talk to them, George will write me letters. You know, so George and I, we have deep friendship.
So he'd like, what, woo women for you?
Yeah, but if I see a lady, I say, George, letter for me, write me something. He used to write beautifully, you know what I mean? But I used to let him down because then I go, the woman would be so happy and be like, hey, Ken, oh, that was amazing. I love your letter. Let's talk. Then I couldn't talk. So I didn't succeed much. Anyway, let's go back here. So now, George told me to keep on doing my factory job. I should not waste my time. The thing I'm good at is that when you say no to me, I don't like to push people. So I'll give you space, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'll go back. I'll come back to you again with another strategy. I'm like, George, now I have this idea and blah, blah. So I convince him. We're going to bring people together and we're going to call it Shining Hope for Communities.
Shining Hope for Communities, or SHOFCO, was the name Kennedy gave his movement. They started off playing football and just coming together to talk about their lives. They even did some theatre performances. But overall, the focus was on positive change and not taking drugs or stealing. So as it developed, I mean, particularly with the football, how did it start to change things?
Oh, God. What made me so happy are the little things that gave hope to the community. Cleaning the streets, telling George to stop the gang and the gang to be given jobs like barbershop. We fundraised. We were crazy. We were amazing. We used to sell T-shirts. Mm. We used to sell eggs.
And how popular did the football get?
We were the best in Kibera. We won a lot of cups. And even now the team is still going on. SHOFCO FC.
And through the football, a woman in the US emailed you to say that she wanted to help out.
Oh, God. How do you know this thing? Tell me now.
No.
Oh, my God. What?
So who was this woman who emailed you?
So anyway. So now I'm the leader of a movement, just like a small Dr. King. So I was crazy by then. I have to say that. We're so proud, happy. So we used to perform. And then I performed at the UN. And so some people knew us. So I used to have my one Yahoo email that I check it once a month. because I couldn't have enough money to go to the city.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I opened my email. I said, hey, my name is Jessica. I heard about you. I want to come to work with you. I'm a student. And then I said, no, this is a movement. We don't take Americans like that. Okay. Then Jessica, she said the same, did not give up. She could say, no, I'm different American. Really, I just want to come and learn. I'm good into theater. I know you guys are doing theater. So then I say, okay, send me your resume, your CV.
Mm-hmm.
And then she sent a CV, which I took to our cabinet. And we're like, it's true, we do theater, but nobody really helped us to write them down. Okay, so Jessica going to bring to us a script. Jessica came, okay? And then why am I going to this story? Anyway, she came. What do you want to know? Tell me.
I mean, I just want people to know that. And then you and Jessica fell in love.
It was not easy. I was not quick. I don't know what happened. I didn't want to do this. I ended up holding her hands while we were walking.
Mm-hmm.
She looked at me weirdly. I'm like, hey, sorry. This is African culture. We hold hands. We do this to make people feel comfortable. So Jessica believed me, okay? So somebody saw us one day holding hands, and one other student from America. Jessica, why are you holding hands with that guy all the time, with Kennedy? He said, oh, you didn't know he's a Kenyan African culture? He's like this. And I say, no. So that's when Jessica kind of knew that maybe I was in love. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but I didn't talk about it. So I didn't tell her that I love her yet. So one day, she got malaria. I look at her. She was really skinny. The skinny, not of Western skinny, skinny of death, you know?
Mm.
So the following day, I walked to the hospital and I looked at her eyes and I say, I love you. And I ran back. And then we became close and we married. And now we have children together. We have twins.
You didn't ever get your friend George to write her any love letters?
No, this one.
So you and Jessica got married. And
yes.
Then you received some news from an American university.
So I met many people, truth be told, who have come through see my work. Jessica, she's like, your dream is one day to have a degree and be able to be a leader. So she helped me together to apply to some university. I know, I'll be honest with you, I was like, this American lady is being crazy. Mm-hmm. There's no way I will go there. So I didn't even believe it, okay? Believe it or not, I got so lucky and I got a full ride scholarship at Wesleyan University in Connecticut.
And you got this scholarship without even having finished your primary school education?
Yes.
So Kennedy went off to university in the US with a full scholarship and, I'll say it again, without ever having finished primary school. After he graduated, and with the help of Jessica, Kennedy and Shofko have raised millions of dollars. They've built 7 health clinics, freshwater facilities in Kibera and other slums. They've also founded 2 schools for girls.
I remember my dream was to see women like my mother having better education. So when I saw these little girls at the age of 4 and 3, had nothing in their houses, and to see some of them have gone through our school, and we have almost over 10 of them in elite high schools, I always have tears of joy. To see that we're going to have women leaders who I knew from the age of 3. You know, we give them the opportunity, and they're going to transform their lives, their families, their neighbors, and Kenya. So I'm so proud of that.
How was it that you caught the attention of Beyoncé?
What happened is that so one day I was in a Clinton Global Initiative in New York, and I met this guy who is the head of Gucci. I didn't know the name Gucci is called Gucci. I call it Gucci.
So the fashion brand Gucci.
Yeah, the guy was dressed nicely, and I went to him and said, hey, my name is Kennedy. And he gave me his card, and we talk, and I said, oh my God, you're working with Gucci. I say Gucci in New York. And he started laughing at me. He didn't correct me. So he said, hey, you're my Gucci friend. So this guy liked me a lot. And then one day in one of their Fifth Avenue, fancy store, he say, dress nicely, Kennedy, and come. So then I go in there, and I have to tell you the truth, I really loved Beyoncé. Mm-hmm. Very nice person. And she gave us $250,000. That now I knew Beyoncé and her team, which I'm in touch with them all that up to now, and they probably promised to come to Kenya. So far, Madonna has come to Shofko. We are still waiting for Beyoncé to come. So that's how I knew Beyoncé.
When you do look at your life now and you look at, I mean, all of the incredible things you've achieved and all the people you're rubbing shoulders with, when you look back at young Kennedy and how little hope you had when you were so young, what do you think he would make of what you've achieved?
Truth be told, if we go back to the real, real Kennedy of that struggle, there is no connection. There's no really connection. Life can change, but mine is really dramatically doesn't make sense. But it's also a heavy weight on me, truth be told. Sometimes I get scared because why did I survive? Why did I meet all these people? Why am I on BBC? Why is this? You know? So I feel it's something I have to fulfill. You see? It's heavy on me sometimes. And people expect a lot from me, truth be told. Even my community. It's too much sometimes. It's scary. I have to say that my story can just be a story that can be used for other young person anywhere in the world, that it's possible. Life is possible. Anything can happen. I didn't want to change anybody's life. I first had to change my own life. Enough is enough of glue. Enough is enough of alcohol, drinking. Enough is enough of drugs. I want to change Kennedy Odede. Then when I change Kennedy Odede, I want to be like a candle and impact my surrounding. That was it.
Kennedy Odede, or the Dr. Martin Luther King of Africa's largest slum. You can see a photo of Kennedy and Beyoncé on our Facebook page. Search for BBC Outlook. And before we leave you, a little reminder about a new podcast from the BBC World Service. Music Live is the podcast that puts four top musicians together in a room and gets them talking. What we end up with is a series of fascinating insights into the lives and minds of music stars, from the insecurities and anxieties that stalk them and feed their music, to tales of life on the road and how you know when you've got a hit. Just search for Music Live wherever you found this podcast.